Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
You know, we're staying on top of that Patrick Peterson story, a big blow to Cardinals fans, NFL fans everywhere, as we learn that Cardinals Pro Bowler Patrick Peterson will be suspended 6 games for performance-enhancing drugs. As I'm learning from our sports department, you should see the poor guys in the sports department, Pamela. It's like a death in the family over there. They are stunned that he is not going to appeal the suspension, which is a de facto, I think, admission of that he used some form of PEDs. So one of the things that we've been talking about, and it seems to, I think we both refer to this story as an onion. The more you peel it, the more you want to cry. The Arizona Department of Corrections and some of the internal goings-on, and we're kind of to the point when it comes to this Lewis prison specifically, the one in the West Valley. What did they know and when did they know it?
Yeah, that's a critical question that needs to be asked and an answer that needs to be given. And it has been asked and the answer has been given. But now we're changing that timeline a bit. We know that the locks at the Lewis prison have not worked for quite some time. But how long are we speaking? And then how long did the powers of be know that? Because we've had correction officers that have been attacked. We've had inmates that have been killed.
Literally.
And it's all been linked to these doors not working. So our TV partners over at ABC 15 and Precise, Dave Biskobing, their investigative reporter, has been all over this. And they're starting to see, when did you know and how long did you know it?
Before our story aired, the department sent us a statement saying it was in May of 2018 that Director Ryan was informed of the situation and took immediate action. Now, 3 weeks after our story aired, the department is saying it was actually November 2017 that it became aware of the problem. That's 6 months earlier than it said before.
Okay, so they first said, oh, it was just a little while ago, and then the story aired. They went, okay, maybe it was a little longer than a little while ago. But Pamela, we spoke with a prison guard, one who was assaulted in the Lewis pod at this where the doors didn't lock, who tells us a different story.
Yeah, Eddie Garza joined us on the program a couple weeks back, and his story was absolutely riveting. If you missed it, you can go back and listen to it on our podcast.
Pretty amazing.
And he shared with us what happened to him that night when he was attacked by not one, but several inmates. He had several surgeries following that, and he still works at the prison.
Went back.
He told us also about how long these locks have been an issue.
The majority of the doors don't work.
How long has it been that way?
Since I started, I hear people saying all the time it's been over 5 years, people who's been there since 2008.
So he's worked with them for 3 years.
And in the entire 3 years he's been there, he says they have been working. So that goes back to 2016.
Now, the other thing too, did that information get to the powers that be? I don't know.
Okay.
Because
fair enough.
About,
did the bosses know?
Think about your own workplace. There was a situation we had years ago with a computer not working here at KTAR.
Really?
And the person that we were working with was, you and I were working with this individual.
Oh, can't we throw them under the bus?
No. They were complaining.
Write their name on a paper so I know who we're talking about.
They were complaining about the computer not working, the computer not working.
Right.
And at one point in time, you just stop, put down your pencil and goes, if you don't go tell IT that this computer isn't working, I guarantee you it will not work tomorrow.
Well, because so I'm the opposite guy. You know me. I send emails on the daily. That light bulb's burned out. That thing doesn't work over
there.
You're
that guy.
Like it, because when I was the boss, it used to drive me nuts when people go, well, that hasn't worked for 6 months. Well, why didn't you say something?
But see, you're proving my point exactly. Did that information get to the powers that be, or do they just harumph between themselves?
But doesn't that in and of itself say that there is an issue at the Arizona Department of Corrections where, let's use corrections officers alone, the front line? Why did they feel they couldn't tell their bosses that the locks don't work? Why didn't they tell anybody? Because from their own stories, Garza's example, they are fearful, and it is dangerous to work in that pod because the locks didn't work.
So what's the big deal between we knew in May of 2018 versus we knew in November of 2017?
So why are these changes a big deal? It shows either the department will change its story as more evidence against it comes out, or they didn't know what was happening in their own prisons.
Yeah, which is worse, almost kind of. You know, I think that there is. You can't allege a cover-up yet until you figure out, well, did anybody tell them? But if people were afraid to tell their superior or tell the bosses, you know, the locks don't work around here? For fear of retaliation, retribution, it would hurt them at work. Well, doesn't that say something about the culture of work?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we'd also heard from many people inside through, you know, direct messages or emails or phone calls that you and I have both received about people talking how they themselves, corrections officers themselves, did not feel empowered at times to say things to their superiors because they would be punished either by the superiors or by other guards. And so it didn't. Put it this way, whether or not that's true, the picture that is being painted right now is one of people aren't empowered to speak up. And if they do speak up, are they listened to?
Or are they punished
but that's,
for speaking
that's
up?
What I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know. We're trying to really put together this puzzle. It's big. It's hard.
It's
there
not
are a
easy,
lot of
right?
pieces to it. And we also find out from ABC 15 that the Arizona Department of Corrections may be walking back some of the problems they have with the doors.
Before our story, ADC firmly disputed the contention that the doors don't lock at all. It was inmate tampering that causes them to open their doors. Now, ADC has walked that back, too. In their new statement, they acknowledge cell door malfunctions as a problem dating into 2017 as well.
So here's the problem with that. Here's the problem. And this gets back to who can you trust, Pamela? That there have been a variety of statements that the Arizona Department of Corrections have made about the condition inside prisons, the conditions of locks, the working conditions for officers, right? There's been a variety of statements that they've made on timelines, on all this. None of them have been true. They keep having to go back. Remember how we told you it was that? It's not that. And at some point, you start wondering, well, who do you believe right now? I believe Dave Biskobing at ABC 15. I believe Corrections Officer Garza. I don't believe the Arizona Department of Corrections to tell me the truth on this issue. I just don't right now.
Right, because it's one of those things where, you know, people and organizations, they teach you how to treat them. And when you keep coming out with false information time after time, would I believe you? And I also think, like, you know, let me put my journalistic hat on here for a second. I think that this story right here is a great example of the importance of the free press.
Oh, and
the
local journalism.
Of local journalism. Oh. Because it is through these FOIA requests, it is through people on the inside leaking information, it is through the research and the, you know, diving into a story, getting your teeth into it, and not letting it go to hold people accountable. That is what we're learning here.
Absolutely.
Because without that, we never would have known. You would have gone to some dinner party somewhere or had a beer at a happy hour with somebody who works in the Department of Corrections, and they may have told you these stories,
what I mean?
But it wouldn't have gone anywhere.
No.
Like, this story right here is just a true testament to the power of the press and why it is so critical, especially in today's day and age where we're constantly asking ourselves, what can I believe?
Shout out to that. Seriously. And again, I think the importance of local, because think about this. If you are a government official on a local level, city, state, county, whatever, the last thing you want is someone like Dave Biskobing at Channel 15, or give credit to the KTR news team, asking questions about things you would prefer not to answer. Why? Because it make you look bad. They are the last ones that want
and they hope you
local
go
journalism.
Away.
Hey, well, yeah,
and
let's try to run out the clock.
Yep,
that's what
exactly.
I get a sense. So we're not letting go of this bone. How's that? We are on to it, and we want to know more about what's going on inside the prisons, and you deserve to know that as well. Is it a hassle to go to the doctor, get an appointment? Takes a long time, right?
Yep.
Can be expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, artificial intelligence might be pretty darn good at accurately diagnosing you. We're not talking about Dr. Google either. We'll tell you what AI is doing.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Okay, I want to admit that I'm not one of them, but I know plenty of people out there, and I do make fun of them as being hypochondriacs, that the minute they get the sniffles or a cough or what's that bump on my arm, they go to Dr. Google.
All the time.
They start typing in their symptoms, and almost every time they come back and tell me, apparently I have Legionnaire's disease and I'll be dead by 5 o'clock today.
I have no idea even what that is.
Right?
But
I'm not going to make it. I've got the Ebola. I've got the SARS.
No,
I'm done for it.
No mad cow, nothing along
not
those
mad
lines.
Cow
no,
disease.
No. But I, you know what? I'm one of those people.
Okay.
I go to WebMD a lot to figure out what's going on.
Dr. Google.
At least try to get, you know, some sort of perspective. And that's why I kind of like what's going on with this. I'm not a huge fan of robots, as you call them.
Robots.
Or AI. It freaks me out. So I'm really trying to wrap my head around why I like this. What we're talking about here is an AI doctor. Think about like a go-between, the middle ground between me searching symptoms on WebMD.
Got it.
And actually getting my butt to the doctor's office.
Okay, somewhere
this
in the
would
middle.
Be in the middle. Okay, how this would work and how it is working right now in the UK is you type in, I have a fever and a cough. Very common, right? What's wrong with me?
Mm-hmm.
The AI, they call it Babylon, is going to ask you some more questions. It's going to go through a list of possible other symptoms.
Okay. And fill out
then,
a form.
Yeah, exactly. And then what it's going to do is let you know if, you know what, you really got to get in to see your doctor. Or, hey, head on down to Walgreens, CVS, whatever it may be, and get these over-the-counter meds and yourself to bed.
Hmm.
What it really does is it kind of like taps into the brain of thousands of doctors at once.
Okay.
And then helps you navigate what your next step should be.
Interesting. I do think it's smarter than Dr. Google. Don't get me wrong, because Dr. Google can be wildly inaccurate for you.
It's not Mal-Cal disease.
Well, and you know what I thought about this, and when I looked at some of the kind of how it digs into it, it asks you questions that you wouldn't have thought to ask yourself. Do you know what I mean? And that's how the AI, the artificial intelligence, whittles down, do you have Legionnaire's disease or do you have a cold? Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because you are maybe not the best at self-diagnosing. You know what your symptoms are, but equating those to a specific illness, malady, virus is a lot harder for you to do if you're not a trained professional or a computer.
But, I mean, think about how this could be beneficial. This
is
beneficial if you're super busy and the doctor can't see you now. Like, every time
times,
I try to call a doctor, like,
right?
We could see you next Wednesday. I'm like, no, I'm sick now.
Next Wednesday?
Right.
You know, I had that cough forever and a day.
Yeah.
And I was told to go see a pulmonary specialist. I have to say it slowly because I don't know how to pronounce that word. They were like, how's 3 weeks from today? I go, I have an issue now. 3 weeks.
I
end up canceling an appointment because my cough went away by the time my appointment came around.
I had to go see a dermatologist.
Yeah.
I called just this week to make an appointment. They said, we could see you June 21st.
You know when they say things like that, you know what I ask them? Of what year?
I like that.
I'm going to fire back at him.
Oh, my goodness. But okay, so okay. Going to like the dermatology route here.
All right. I got a rash.
Well, they can accurately diagnose skin cancer as much as dermatologists can.
Wow.
So you're seeing how there is most definitely a benefit to it. So if you're busy, if you live in like a remote area where, you know, there's the one doctor and, hey, he went on vacation. You know what I mean? You have access there. And then also, you know, I'm not a worry wart, so I don't like
to
be an alarmist. So do I have to go to the doctor or can I just go back to bed?
Rub some dirt on it. Walk it off. Here's something, though, for all you kids out there who use excuses to get out of going to school. How many times have you had an earache? Earache my eye. You're still going to school, right? Well, guess what? There's an app for that, Pamela.
There's an app for my earache?
There is a new app out there. A team of researchers have put this together that uses an app on your phone, which, check this out, sends sound pulses into the ear canal and then can measure whether there's fluid behind the eardrum, a sign of an earache or slash an infection. There is an app for that. Think about Hold on. Just think about how amazing that is.
App.
Think about how amazing a world we live in now that your phone can detect an infection in your ear. What world do we live in?
Pretty awesome.
It's
one.
It's pretty darn amazing.
But you know what's not awesome? Oh, if you're that kid trying to get out of going
trying to get
school.
Out of it. Because I got an earache. Okay.
I remember back in the day, you know, maybe there was a spelling test I didn't study for. And maybe, you know, I had a stomach ache and mom put the thermometer under my tongue and I took the thermometer out and I put it on the light bulb.
Try to get on the light bulb.
And then mom comes back and she's like, oh, really?
Really?
Like, it was like,
you have a temperature of 128.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Seriously.
Hey, you know what? If you miss any of the show, we got you covered. Download the Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes Show podcast. Never have to miss a thing. Take us with you everywhere you go. This week it is brought to you by NovoCure.
So, coming up next, State Superintendent of Public Instruction Kathy Hoffman will join us live in studio. We have her in every month. Education, what an important issue for so many people around the state, around the valley. This week, she announced a school safety task force, an effort to address violence in schools. How will her task force work, and how's it different from the school safety legislation, the bill that was just signed by the governor? Kathy Hoffman, our state superintendent of public instruction, joins us next on Arizona's News Station.
Arizona's News Station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Hey, let's jump right into it, Pamela. She is our state superintendent of public instruction. Kathy Hoffman joins us in studio every single month. We're very lucky to have her in here, get a chance to talk to her about the issues in education in and around the state of Arizona. And first off, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Fine. It's wonderful to have you here, by the way. So one of the things we want to talk about is something you did this week, which was the initiation of a school safety task force. Specifically, my question to you is that the Arizona legislature and Governor Ducey signed into law what they call as a school safety bill in some way, shape, or form. How is your task force different than the bill that was signed into law?
So the bill that was signed into law was just one piece of what is really needed, which what we desperately need is a comprehensive plan. And one of the things that I saw was missing was the student's voice. And so the March for Our Lives students came to me and they said, we want to be a part of this task force. We want this task force to have teachers and counselors and police representation and make this a bipartisan, comprehensive task force that can look at this more holistically. So what that bill you're talking about did is it requires schools to report threatening, requires the schools to report threatening behavior to police and also to notify parents. And that seems like pretty common sense that if there's an issue that needs police attention, that the police should be notified and parents should be notified. That seems like a one step. But we know that our schools have the worst ratio of counselor to student ratio in the country. And we know that we're also seeing students who are having mental health issues resulting sometimes in tragic suicides.
Yeah.
And so we have a lot more work to do.
Okay, so what can this task force that's made up of, I think, all the right actors, so to speak, you've got a good group of people there that are going to be focusing on those critical issues of mental health, of emotional health and well-being. I know that the legislature punted on a couple of those bills that would have done something quite similar. So now you've developed this task force. But where is the teeth? What could potentially come out of it? It's comprehensive, but is there any power, I guess you could say, behind it?
Well, one of the powers that will definitely come from it is that we are going to develop resources for school districts. And so as the Department of Education, we can send out guidance and school safety models to help guide schools. That's something we can do without the help of the legislature. We do want to work with the legislature, and we will have legislators serving on this task force as well as I hope to have people from the governor's office there as well, so that then in the next legislative session, we can have recommendations so that they can put more teeth behind it.
She's our state superintendent of public instruction, Kathy Hoffman. But these are, if I understand it correctly, suggestions, dare I say, guidelines. Are the schools that are receiving these, are they Are they welcoming of this? Are they suspicious of it? Is this something they say we desperately need? Help me understand your customer, for lack of a better term, the schools, the school boards, the school districts. How are they receiving this?
They've been receiving it very well. We've received a ton of messages this past week of people who want to serve on the task force. The schools do want this. They want guidance. They want to make sure they're using research, evidence-based practices, because of course, all schools, all teachers, all parents care about the safety and well-being of our students. And we want to be on the preventative side of this, not the reactive side of this. And so that's how we're approaching it, is how can we put together guidelines to prevent violent acts in schools and also to support the mental health and well-being of all students.
We're talking right now to Kathy Hoffman, State Superintendent of Public Instruction. And the task force has been getting a lot of attention this week, and I think rightfully so. The other thing in education that's also been getting a lot of attention this week is the budget.
Oh, yeah.
And we know that it was just a year ago around this time, you know, Red for Ed had wrapped up and the governor had come to the table with, you know, 20 by 2020. And yet we still have these standouts. I think that there was one in my neck of the woods out there in Gilbert where you have educators who are standing on overpasses, bringing attention to the budget process, which is going in right now. And in fact, I think I heard Joe Thomas with the Arizona Education Association this morning talk about there's money in the budget for schools that just needs to go into it. And you've got a lot of educators who are trying to make sure that that happens. Where does that money need to go? There's only so much to go around. As the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, what is the priority for you with dollars for education?
Well, first, we absolutely need to make sure that the governor and the legislature stick to their 20 by 2020 plan. I've always said that's a great first step. That is dollars going straight to our teachers and our classrooms that are desperately needed. And I think it's very appropriate that teachers are being very vigilant right now, especially since we saw a budget leaked out of the Senate from the Republican leadership that was leaked out that had a lot of cuts to it had less funding for education than what the governor had proposed. So, for example, the governor had proposed in his budget proposal that we have money for the Teachers Academy, which supports university students who are working on their education degrees to become teachers. And I'm very supportive of having that funding to help support our new teachers, because we do have a teacher shortage. But that was not included in this budget that was leaked out of the Senate recently. It also had a reduction for the funding that was meant for school counselors and school safety, which is a priority for us. So we absolutely need to make sure that's in the budget. Another area, since we didn't see the charter school reform bill make it all the way through this year, that bill died this year in the legislature. One of the other proposals that's still important to me is that we have funding for more staff for the state charter school board, because those staff members are the ones that go into charter schools and they do audits and they count kids and they check fingerprint clearances and all these things to make sure that our students are safe, that our teachers are well trained, and that they're appropriately using the funding that they are receiving from the state. So I fully support the governor's plan to have an increased staff for the state charter school board.
As the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, and I will account myself as maybe one of the ones ignorant as how the process works, how much influence do you have on that? Do you have, lack of better terms, the direct line to the governor? Do you sit down face to face with him and say, here's what we need, here's what my proposals, if you will? He agrees or disagrees, don't get me wrong, but how does that communication go?
I wish it was quite like that. It's not quite like that. We do have a good working relationship. His budget was developed before I was inaugurated, and so I didn't have much influence over his current budget this year. We have a strong policy team that works with me in the Department of Education, and I have been meeting personally with legislators as well as my policy team. We have been working on building those relationships and establishing trust. We do still have our legislature is still controlled by our Republican Party, and that sometimes is a challenge for us, but we've been working really hard to build those relationships, especially with the more moderate legislators, and have had success there. So we're working really hard, and we're going to keep advocating to restore funding to our classrooms and our teachers and our schools, because it is an investment in our future and very important to our state.
Kathy Hoffman, our state superintendent of public instruction, thank you for your time today. We do appreciate it.
Thank you again for having me.
Outstanding. Every single month, come in here, talk about the issues that are important. And again, education, right up there at the top of the list.
Top issues in our state, yeah.
Every time we ask folks what they're concerned about, education is right up there. I see movies, except for the scary ones, so you don't have to. Got some new movies opening up this weekend. We'll tell you about them. It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
KTAR News, 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes. Movies in a Minute, brought to you by Peoria Ford. Ready to serve at 91st Avenue and Bell Road. If you bought anywhere but Peoria Ford, you paid too much.
All right, remember, I see movies, except for the scary ones, so that, you don't have to. Today, a big movie opening up, expected to take up a lot of room at the movie theaters, by the way. It is the third installment of Super Assassin John Wick, played by Keanu Reeves.
You have no idea what's coming.
Mr. Wick broke the rules. I trust you understand the repercussions if he survives.
John Wick, excommunicado, is now in effect.
Okay, I missed John Wick 1 and John Wick 2. So how's John Wick 3?
About the same. So John Wick is Keanu Reeves. Halle Berry is in this. Lawrence Fishburne.
It's an all-star cast.
And they've been in some of the other, at least Lawrence Fishburne, been in some of the other ones. So here's the deal. So John Wick is a super assassin.
Okay.
And there is a, think of it as the Assassins Union.
Oh, they're unionized.
They're guild, if you will.
Awesome.
Well, he violates the code, if you will. So they put a hit out on his head. So this movie is 2 hours and 10 minutes. Hold on, that's not a bad thing.
Okay.
Of John Wick killing people in every conceivable way you can think of.
Wow. Action packed.
One of the jokes is out there is like that people were trying to keep track of the body count and they can't.
Ooh.
This movie is bloody.
Yay.
But just know what
just
you're getting.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's why I didn't see one or two.
So again, the story, there's a hit on his head. He has to try to find redemption. This and the other. People are not going for the story. I can acknowledge that. You know, if you haven't seen one and two, you might be a little lost in this. There's a lot of callbacks to the previous movies as to maybe why things happen. And number three basically picks up at the last scene of number two. Basically.
So go back and see two.
At least two.
And then
go see three. But for the type of people that want to go see, enjoy John Wick 1, enjoy John Wick 2, like that kind of action, like that kind of death and destruction.
How's this one?
John Wick 3 is it on steroids. On the 1 to 5 scale, I gave John Wick a 4.
Wow, okay.
I mean,
okay.
It's for this is exactly what people expect. They care less about the story and the fact that Keanu Reeves has three lines of in it. You know.
Well, I may not be aware of the John Wick saga, I am aware of Game of Thrones. Even though I have never watched an episode, I am very well aware of the pop culture that is Game of Thrones.
This Sunday, the final episode, 8 seasons, it comes to an end. We allegedly will find out who sits on the Iron Throne. Who ends up, the Game of Thrones, see, thrones a king sit on. So the game is all the kings killing each other till you get down to one. Who's going to win the Game of Thrones?
Now, even though I haven't seen the show, I'm catching a vibe, though.
What's that?
That there are a fair amount of people out there, I know some of them, that are none too happy with this last season.
Yeah, well, specifically the last episode. Last Sunday night kind of bloated up for a lot of people. And by the way, I am hashtag Team Daenerys. And I am unapologetically Team Daenerys.
No, you're Team Dragon.
I love dragons. I really want a dragon.
I, Daenerys of House Targaryen, sentence you to die.
Yeah, sentence you to die by dragon. Oh, I want a dragon.
She sentenced everyone to die.
Yeah. So here's the issue. So all through since season one.
Yeah.
Daenerys Targaryen started as a young.
She's a blonde.
She's the blonde.
Okay.
Thank you. With the white hair.
Yeah.
With a claim to the throne.
Okay.
And you see her kind of progress along this path where she was seen as like a strong, independent woman fighting for what's
right. Hear me roar.
Last Sunday, she became the biggest war criminal in the history of Westeros.
That's a bit of a twist.
Where even after the city surrendered to her army and dragon, she proceeded to kill everybody that surrendered and burned the place to the ground. So now you have people who are upset about it, and the ones most upset are the ones that, like, name their kids Danny, Daenerys, or Khaleesi.
What?
And they find out that she's a war criminal. It's like naming your kid Adolf in the middle of World War II.
Or maybe you just wait until the end of an entire series to make sure you're making a good decision. Or how about we just don't name our kids after
fictional
Game of Thrones
characters. Game of Thrones characters.
All right, then.
Final episode this Sunday night. I can't wait. I'm still going with Team Daenerys. Hashtag I want a dragon. So, do you work with people who may or may not be under the influence of marijuana? How many people admit to being high at work? How many of you are high right now?
Oh, man.
Talking about it next on Arizona's News Station.